Welcome back to Hashtag Black, our podcast where we try to hash out the hashtags that frame Black lives. I'm Stephanie Shanakan. I teach in the School of Music and Black Studies. I'm an ethnomusicologist really interested in the intersections of music, culture, and ultimately Black life. This podcast was created because so many of the discussions we were having in our Black Studies classes were spilling over into other spaces. And we decided that it was time to capture those conversations and bring them into a podcast. So we invite you to follow us and listen and give us some feedback. Every week I will bring in a few of my students to have a conversation about the big hashtags that have been trending. This week I have three of my students. I call all of them my favorites, but they really are. These three are Marshall Allen, Ida Campbell-Jones, and Kennedy Moore. So we'll go around real quick, your majors, your names, and then we will get into it.
Marshall Allen, senior, double majoring in political science and Black studies.
Ida Campbell-Jones, senior, majoring in Black studies.
Kennedy Moore, senior, majoring in communication and Black studies.
All right. So we're going to start with what I consider to be one of the bigger ones in the last couple weeks, and that is hashtag Cobb County. Which blew my mind when I saw it. I've been watching that. And so let's start with Marshall. Hashtag Cobb County, what are you thinking?
So I read a couple of the tweets about the people who thought it was funny. And I agreed. I thought it was funny, too, for the simple fact that it's literally like adding insult to injury, right? So we have this known fact that Black people are murdered by law enforcement at an alarming rate. We have the fact that, you know, bodies have been laid out in the street 4.5 hours, that people magically die in custody, that people disappear, right? Stuff like that. All of these things. And now we have at most the joke, right? At the very least, we have this joke. So I agree. You know, I thought it was hilarious. Mm-hmm. Not in the sarcastic sense of, well, you know, the officer was just joking, but I mean, in the sense of what else can you do, right? Tears don't work, right? The screaming doesn't work. The letters don't work. None of that, right? Mm-hmm. So what more can you do? So, like, for instance, a friend of mine posted on Facebook one time this meme that was like, you know, 620,000 white Americans died during slavery. That's a fact. We didn't get a thank you. Right. And so everybody was like outraged by him posting it on my timeline. I was crying. Like, I laughed so hard. I reposted it because, I mean, the ignorance in of itself just spoke. Right. Mm-hmm. One of the allies on my page, though, who majored in history, she got on there and she said, well, 300,000 did this, 220,000 did that. This group did this. This group did that, completely, you know, counteracting the theme in totality. And I said, I wasn't even going to give it that, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. it didn't require that.
So it's almost laughing to keep from crying, right?
Yeah.
And to back up a little bit, Cobb County that Marshall just talked about was the situation where a police officer stopped a white woman driving. She said she was scared to pull out her license because she was worried that she would be attacked by, or, you know, those cases that we see so often. And the police officer says to her, "Ma'am, don't you know we only kill black people.
Right. So it was interesting because I read a bunch of articles outside of the Constitution, outside of the Twitter hashtag. And so Lieutenant Greg Abbott, he was on the force for 28 plus years, right? And he said that, and, you know, you have the people defending him. But what I thought was interesting most was the police chief's response. Most times we like to criticize law enforcement, of course, because they say problematic stuff. But I thought his response was interesting because he said, you know, I don't know what's in his heart, right? But I know what he said, you know, and that's a direct quote. And then, like, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and it was an article there posted by Maris Lutz, said, like, many police officers insist that the scandal is merely the latest attempt of an ongoing media campaign targeting law enforcement. How do you target law enforcement, right, in a negative capacity or shame them for anything of that nature in regards to, you know, black bodies dying, right, and stuff like that,
right,
when the truth of the matter is, I mean, we have it on tape. Like, mm-hmm, what is there to criticize? What is there? What scandal, mm-hmm, right, are you referring to in reference to this situation?
Ida.
I think that it's just, like Marshall said, it's funny because it's like everybody always defends police officers and their actions. But when he deliberately says, oh, you know, we only kill black people, it's like you have no defense. Like, you can't take back what he said. You can't say, oh, like maybe he was scared or like he was defending himself. Like, no, he literally said we only kill black people. Maybe he was being sarcastic, maybe he was joking, but like there's no way to like backtrack on what he said, mm-hmm, because those are his words.
Good. Kennedy?
One, it's just, I'm trying to think, like, did the police officer who said this, was he, like, fired or, like, is he being investigated now or anything?
He retired. That was the thing. That was the controversy behind what the commissioner said. So Commissioner Lisa Cupid, she's the only black member on the entire board. And she's really for police reform and stuff like that. She dismissed the narrative of he was trying to de-escalate the situation with the joke. She said that's not possible. There's no way that you can say a statement like that and de-escalate the situation. However, the problem and the controversy surrounding this outside of the initial encounter is a simple fact that he retired first. So he had the option to retire, you know, when retirement comes, benefits and pension, XYZ, et cetera, et cetera, instead of being fired as a consequence, right?
Right.
You know, so at the end of the day, he's still a 28-year
citizen,
exactly, you know.
And it's just like at this point, like, it's kind of funny, like sarcastically funny, mm-hmm, but at the same time it's just like this is really getting old. Like, okay, these police officers, they can kill us in the street, not fired. You can joke about killing us in the street, not fired. What is it just gonna take at this point? This is literally why we have Black Lives Matter, because people just don't get it. Like, it's a joke to them. It's a joke to people who say all lives matter. And mm-hmm, at this point, it's just so predictable.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then something else that was interesting too, his name was Steve Gaynor. He said that the county was allowing media to dictate its responses, throwing Abbott to the wolves without proper investigation. Then later on, he said, police don't profile. We're just known for intense enforcement of the law. Like,
okay,
those were his direct quotes.
Okay.
I have two questions.
Two questions from Ida.
What's the first one you said?
He said the county is allowing media to dictate its responses.
Without proper investigation.
Yeah, he said that the county was...
What do you need to investigate?
My point. That was the point I was making. Like, what is there to investigate?
Okay. All right. So, speaking of profiling and the actions behind that, let's move to hashtag Michael Bennett, which is another case that, you know, Michael Bennett, he is a defensive, I looked this up, he's because, you know, I don't follow football, but I follow these cases. He's the defensive end of the Seattle Seahawks. He says he was profiled. There was some shots after the Mayweather fight, and he, like everybody else, jumped fences to try and get away from that, which I would do too, mm-hmm, right? The police said that he looked suspicious, so they got him, put him on the ground, and put a gun to his head, which, again, is that profiling? Is it not? Mm-hmm. Let me start with Kennedy on this one.
I didn't hear about this story at all until I was told about the hashtag, and I looked it up, I read the statement, and just like now, so not only do we have like a football player who he might have faced, you know, police brutality, he's protesting police brutality and speaking out about it. So now we have not only Kaepernick, now we have Michael Bennett, who he's faced this, he's written a statement, he's told the media exactly what happened. And so, like, frankly, I believe him. I mean, in most of these cases, I'm going to believe, you know, my brothers and sisters on what went down. But, you know, it's just kind of like maybe this will cause people to pay more attention. Either they'll pay more attention or either they're going to be like, oh, this isn't proof, I don't believe you. But it's just really... reading his statement at the end, it was just kind of like, oh, it wasn't until they realized that he was a football player that they let him go, and then they felt stupid.
So that's my question is, what if he wasn't a football player?
Exactly.
What if he was just a regular guy like Philando Castile, right? What would the end of that story have been? I mean, they ultimately let him go, but what would have happened if it were just an ordinary guy like that?
I think it would have ended like every other video we've seen, unfortunately. But also, I think that this situation, I just watched the video, and I think that this situation will, it will make people pay more attention to like protests like Colin Kaepernick and the other football players protesting the national anthem. And it will make people realize that these players have a platform, and this is the reason why, because this could this does happen to to anyone.
Right.
It can happen to anyone, and it has happened.
Right. Marshall.
So as far as like them saying his actions seem suspicious, right? So there's an article on CBS Sports, and it says, as they moved toward the nightclub, an individual later identified as Bennett was seen crouched down behind a gaming machine as officers approached, right? Then it says, once he was in the officer's view, he quickly ran out of the south doors, jumped over a wall toward the road of East Las Vegas Boulevard. And according to the officers, those actions were seen as suspicious. So, like, I guess my question would be, where is the suspicion in that?
Mm-hmm.
There were gunshots in a club, right? Or wherever, you know, the event occurred, there are gunshots. He's hiding, you know. You see law enforcement. I don't have on a helmet, right? I don't have on my jersey. I'm unidentifiable to the majority of the population, right? I'm going to run, too. I'm already scared because there are shots going off, right? But then the authority figure who's meant to protect me and give validation to my fear is also somebody who could potentially be after me, you know? And so, like I said, I guess that's for the most part is my question is, where does the suspicion come from, right? In running from gunshots initially, right? Why is it that after he saw the officers that he jumped? Why couldn't it be he was already mid-jump or in preparation, you know, to hop over the wall, and it just so happened that it coincided, right, with the officer seeing him, right? Causation and correlation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's the issue with that there, right? Why is it always black men are always running, black women are always running, you know, black people in general are always fleeing from the cops, right?
Well, the testimony that many of these cops who get off is that they looked at the black man or the black woman, and they were fearful. They were afraid for their life. So there's something, again, about the optics of being black. There's something that Kennedy said that reminds me of our next hashtag. I thought this was compelling. When Hurricane Harvey hit Houston, I saw all these hashtags saying, all cities matter, right? Hashtag all cities matter. And I thought that was a really powerful way of hitting back against the All Lives Matter movement. Thoughts on that?
I kind of laughed. I was like, is this a troll? Once again, black Twitter. And so I think, like kind of how I said before, it just makes all lives matter look stupid. Like, all cities matter. Clearly, Houston is struggling. They need resources. They need support. So for them to say all cities matter, it kind of like, it makes it, it kind of proves the point of how all lives matter is kind of dumb. Like, you, black people need help. Black people, we need support. We need to fight police brutality, we need to fight our oppression, but y'all are focused on all lives, so.
I thought it was comical, too, and I guess that's why, like, even with Cobb County, why I said it was funny, because the sarcasm, right, of activists, of just the common public in general, is hilarious. Like, you know, it's at an all-time high, like, taking serious issues, right, That's one thing, because you know they're serious. But when you know that those serious issues and the efforts towards fixing those serious issues aren't going to, you know what I'm saying, create any type of substantial change, right? You know, at this point, at the end of your rope. So like you said, laughing in from crying, right? But with the All Cities Matter, just like Kendi said, like I thought that was interesting as a means to, like, shoot back at, you know, All Lives Matter, showing that, you know, like, again, you know what I'm saying, like, resources or help, right, or equality for that matter, isn't pie, right? More help for Houston does not mean less help for the rest of the world, right? But I also want to touch on something that Kennedy said on her social media, which was about this idea of not donating to the Red Cross. And I think that was really important, especially in talks of, like, when you hear people talk about, like, environmental racism and stuff like that, and, like, what it looks like for poor communities not to get as much help, like the woman who cussed out the CNN reporter for being in her face. You know, she literally showed up, and all of a sudden it's, well, what do you think about this? I've been stranded for a week in 4 feet of water with no food, right? What do you think I'm gonna think, right? And I think All Cities Matter definitely contributes to that larger conversation, you know, dealing with the Red Cross and stuff like that. So
and definitely following what will happen with Irma, mm-hmm. As it hits Florida. I've already started seeing stories about where the resources are going, and I have a feeling we'll be talking about hashtag Irma for hashtag Black in a couple weeks.
Don't forget hashtag Harvey Cat. Harvey Cat.
What's that?
It's not a necessarily a counter hashtag, but it's a hashtag about an angry cat who had to swim through the water, and it's like memes that come up like "Don't mess with Texas, Texas tough." Hashtag Harvey Cat. Like, there are a plethora of memes focused on the cat having to swim angrily through the water and how people are hoping that the cat is safe and dry and stuff like that. Hashtag
Ooh.
Harvey Cat.
Ooh, Marshall. I'll be following
that. What part of Twitter do you be on?
We're going to move to our next hashtag, which will be hashtag DACA. So over the weekend, this troubles me because I'm an immigrant also.
Absolutely.
And, you know, for the administration to pull the rug from under young Americans, because that's what they are in all ways except
exactly.
The passport, right? It seems like such an inhumane thing to do. It strikes me also that as an immigrant, I'm helping our campus think about citizenship, right? So it's just an example of the kinds of contributions that immigrants make. Also want to point out that we seem to focus on only one kind of immigrant when it comes to these
right.
these issues. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to find out from you all what you thought about hashtag DACA, immigration, and Black folks.
I just think that, like, thinking about my education and, like, growing up, the people and, like, the most, the best teachers that I've had, the best, like, helpers that I've had growing up in my life have all been immigrants. And not many of them had their citizenship at the time that they helped me. So it's just, like, immigrants are such a significant part to this country. Our country was founded by, like, America was founded by immigrants. And illegal immigrants. Okay. Everyone here that has a significant role is an immigrant. So it
came from somewhere else.
Right. So it's just, I can just see our country deteriorating after this, because how are we supposed to move on without such significant people?
Good question.
Right. And, like, honestly, ICE is already, since Trump has been in office, ICE has really stepped up deporting people and just, like, claiming immigrants, putting them in camps and stuff. And so, honestly, like, if we don't really get it together, I would not want to see this happen. But at this point, the way we're treating immigrants, it'll mess around and be another concentration camps like mm-hmm. they had the Japanese people. So, like, we need to just really recognize that, first, we're on indigenous land
yes.
that was stolen. The people that stole this land were immigrants that just came over here violently. So for us to, you know, build these policies and take away policies that help immigrants, it's just really contradicting, honestly.
And the immigrants that they're focusing on deporting, this is their land.
Exactly.
This is literally
technically
their land.
Exactly.
The majority of the United States was a part of Mexico. So how can you literally take people from their home?
Where they were at.
So for me, I was looking at DACA from the political science part.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting looking at it from this perspective, because it brings in this theory and this idea that a lot of political science scholars toss around, which is this idea of executive power. You have these ideas of executive power, executive privilege, and presidential prerogative, right? And we see a lot with this, because as I've been reading through these articles, I see a lot of scholars correlating, like, the decision former President Obama had made to enact, right, DACA, Dreamers, et cetera, to what Lincoln was doing in the 1850s and 60s as president. Like, this ultimate power of suggestion, this ultimate power of authority without necessarily being a dictatorship, right? So it pretty much boils down to, like, the whole idea of it being incorporated in the first place of president's interpretation of the Constitution. What's constitutional, what's not? Because one of the biggest debates outside of, you know, immigration is, was it constitutional, right? But the idea is, and the truth is, that there's really no understanding or clear understanding of whether or not it is constitutional or not, because from history, from a historical perspective, from political science itself, you know, they talk about these ideas of executive power and privilege and stuff like that, which really comes down to the president's interpretation,
right.
First and foremost, right. Congress, and then the people, right?
Right?
So I thought that was really interesting as far mm-hmm. as the conversation of DACA, because that mm-hmm. is the policy
right.
and the debate that's you know, that's right. floating around.
And that's what's being used to justify yeah. removing it, yeah. right?
The same justification to removing it was the same justification for enacting it.
Because yeah. there's nothing to say that it's not unconstitutional. Right. That's why the Constitution is so
vague
because yeah. the majority of what President Trump has been doing he's been finding loopholes. Like, whatever, like, everybody's asking, like, can he do that? There's nothing to say that he can't do mm-hmm. it. So that's the reason as to why he is doing it.
So at the end of the day, it's the humanity of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the character of the person who gets to enforce it. Has an impact on the policy.
They're trying to separate, like, legislation and morale when really they should be connected.
Snaps all around, Ida. Okay, now, so those are the big ones. We'll keep following them, and we'd love to hear what other people have to say about these hashtags. But let's quickly go around and talk about some hashtags that we are in love with or concerned about or following. So, Ida, first.
I already know this, what you're gonna say.
Don't steal mine. Should I go? I guess.
Yeah, so, you can go. And then
Did y'all watch Insecure on
That's
HBO?
That's exactly what I was about to
Hashtag
talk about.
Hashtag Insecure.
Hashtag Insecure. Like, I just started watching Insecure, and I'm, like, really in love with...
You were hating on it before.
I gave it a chance, and I fell in love with Issa. Molly is funny. Daniel is yes.
Daniel is nice.
What does that yes mean?
Daniel have you is, seen Have you seen Yolan Noel? He is
fine.
Beautiful.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, ladies. Beautiful. Okay, yeah. Is that okay. your hashtag?
It was, but I'm gonna do kind of a joint one hashtag being Mary Jane. Because
I stopped watching that after
really?
The first season.
No,
should I get back on it?
You need to keep watching it because they're almost at the same point in annoyance with me. Like, Issa is annoying me. Mary Jane, she's kind of annoying me, but she's getting a little better. Her mama is really getting to me right now.
We should do a whole show on these shows because they represent various cultural aspects of Black life. And we should discuss whether they are authentic mm-hmm. representations of
But if you want a plug for a podcast that I listen to, Insecurity, Crystal and Hey Fran Hey, they do a recap of Insecure every week, Tuesday.
Very good. Marshall?
My hashtag was hashtag MLK statue. For those that don't know that are listening, so like there was a new statue of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. unveiled on the 54th anniversary of his famous I Have a Dream speech, you know, Atlanta State Capitol, opposite of two Confederate officials, right? So people say, well, Confederate officials, well, the first one was Brandon Gordon, right, Confederate general and reportedly KKK leader. The next one was former Senator Richard Russell, opponent of strong, mm-hmm. opponent of civil rights legislation. The decision was made before Charlottesville, Virginia, right? So my first problem with it was, one, you know, I guess the logic, right? I guess the logic and the intentions of it are somewhat baffling me, right? Are you placing, you know, Dr. King amongst these Confederate leaders as a sense of sarcasm or of irony, right? Saying like, oh, you wanted to oppose, however, this is what we've got done. Or are you doing that because you recognize the heroic sense of Martin Luther King Jr. as well as the Confederate leaders, right? But something overall, like outside of that question that really like got to me was this. So the city of Atlanta tweeted Mayor Reed. She said, Dr. King's legacy transcends politics. It transcends race. It unifies us. Completely dumbfounded. Yeah. How do you have something which is specifically, right, particular to race, transcend it?
Mm-hmm. And what his daughter actually said at the unveiling was, it's interesting, my father used to be, he was the most hated man when he was killed, and now he's the most loved man
now that he's dead.
So how did that transition happen? That's something we should definitely study. We got to wrap it up, guys. My hashtag would be hashtag FallFest. Happened right here on this campus a couple days ago. I just love seeing Black Mizzou coming together as they did a couple evenings ago, all the sororities and the fraternities, the music, the information, all of that. And I believe at least Marshall and Kennedy were part of that. Ida, were you there?
I showed up at 5:30.
I was there around the same time.
I'm a senior. I don't need to get involved in anything else.
All right, #Black.
I just went to go watch my friends.
Okay, good. All right, so that's the show for today. Love to hear you all and your thoughts on what's going on around us that affects us. And we'll see you next time.